Now, one of his delusions was that all the doctors treating him were fake doctors. And after about 2 years of therapy, this delusion went away. And when his therapist asked him why he isn't talking about the fake doctors, he said, listen, you cannot be a doctor without listening to your patient. If you don't listen to your patient and try to listen and understand him, you're fake doctors. You see, there's an emotional sense behind the delusions. And I think this is what we try to do in psychotherapy.
Welcome to the IPA podcast, Psychoanalysis on and off the couch. This is a podcast in which we will discover the world of psychoanalysis that lives beyond the couch, beyond the individual consultation room. We will meet psychoanalysts who work in dialysis units, prenatal clinics, corporate boardrooms, community centers, humanitarian organizations, and with vineyard workers, just to name a few. We hope these conversations expand our awareness of how broadly psychoanalytic thinking extends into our communities. Come listen, enjoy, and please share your comments on the webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Harvey Schwartz. I'm an analyst on the faculty at the Psychoanalytic Association of New York and the Psychoanalytic Center of Philadelphia. My guest today is Dr. Ilan Amir. Dr. Amir is a psychiatrist and a training and supervising psychoanalyst at the Israeli Psychoanalytic Society, and he is a lecturer at the Tel Aviv University Psychotherapy Program. Dr. Amir is a founding member and current chair of L'chol Nefesh, which in English means for every soul. L'chol Nefesh is a program dedicated to the use of psychoanalytic therapies for the chronically mentally ill patients in public health settings. It is a program that is equally devoted to the empiric study of the utility of those treatments. As you will hear in today's interview, Dr. Amir is someone who reveals himself to be quite capable of the deep immersion in the subjective intimacy of long-term clinical treatment of patients. He's also someone, as you will hear, who really values the careful empiric study of the utility of those treatments. With great pleasure, here is my interview with Dr. Ilan Amir. Ilan, welcome to our podcast. One of the pleasures for me in having the opportunity to conduct these interviews is that I get to meet colleagues internationally who are doing really fascinating work, and in your case, groundbreaking work. And in learning about what you do, I've come across a new term, which is an added pleasure to learn a new term. And the new term is psychodialysis. And as I've got to learn about it, I've come to appreciate that it really represents a deep theoretical and practical thinking about how you approach the population in the public mental health centers with chronic mental illness using the psychoanalytic model. Those are three things that rarely does one see combined, and you and your group are doing it really magnificently, and I invite you to share it with our audience so we can learn together about it.
Okay, thank you, Harvey. I'm very happy and excited to speak to you and to speak on this podcast, and I'll be more than happy to try and tell you about our project and try to converge to what we mean by the term psychodialysis. I will start with my history a little bit, and then I will tell you how I got to using this term. I'm a psychiatrist, and I started my psychiatric training. I had to do a year in a closed ward. And one of my first patients in the closed ward was a young man, about 35 years of age, who was divorced, and was a father of two children. And he was diagnosed as suffering from paranoid schizophrenia. And it was, I think, when I met him, it was his fifth hospitalization. And all his hospitalization was because he was hospitalized by a court order because he wasn't aware of his being paranoid. And he stopped taking all the medication and treatment when he was charged out of the hospital, when he was released out of the hospital. So I spoke to this man. I made him an intake. And after we finished the intake, he asked me if he could make a setting, a psychotherapeutic setting, a talking therapy setting for 3 times a week. And I was very interested at that time in the way talking therapy or psychotherapy could have an impact on people suffering from severe mental disorders. And I was very happy. And I said, I will ask my superior psychiatrist if we can do that. I said, I hope he will let me do that. And when I spoke to this, my superior psychiatrist, he said, no way. He said, this is a patient who's paranoid schizophrenia. He doesn't know he's sick. He doesn't know. He doesn't take his medication after he stops. I don't think talking therapy will be able to help him, and it will probably make him worse. So I heard that, and I went out of the room, and I was really in a bad mood because of that. And then I went back to my psychiatrist, and I said, listen, if this man wants to speak to somebody, and it's a kind of therapy, then this is some way that he acknowledges that he needs work, he needs help, and he has a problem. And maybe this is the way which you could help him get into treatment. And he said, you had a point. And he said, I'll let you speak to him only if you speak to him over the working hours, because we don't have time for 3 hours to speak to such a patient on the workload you have. I said, I'll be happy. I'll be speak to him after hours of work. And that's what I did. And I started therapy with this patient. And this was my first patient doing psychotherapy. And I spoke to him, and I had not a lot of idea of what psychotherapy is. I've been in treatment myself before that for 5 years, but I had a little bit of that idea. And I worked in a boarding school for children with severe emotional problems, who was psychoanalytically oriented boarding school. All the children had therapy, so I heard a little bit about that, but I didn't have any chance of doing psychotherapy. And I started to speaking to this patient, and he came for 3 times a week. And at the beginning of the therapy, very quickly, he told me that he understands that he's sick and that he has paranoid schizophrenia. And he'll be taking the pills I will tell him to take. And he hopes by taking the pills and speaking to me, he will get better and cured, and he will be able to go back to his life, which was 5 years he was out of his life. And he started taking the medication, and he got a little bit better. And after about 6 weeks of hospitalization, he went out of the hospitalization, and he asked to me to go on with the talks, because it was very hard for him to go back to his life and to start working again, start to be in contact again with his family and children. He was in contact with him for almost 5 years. And I started to get to know him. I understood the complex emotional issues he had to deal with. He was very, very fragile. He was very, very, he didn't have trust in anybody in the world. He was overwhelmed by anxiety. The medication helped a little bit. He had trust in me. Before that, he didn't trust in anyone, but something in our connection made him trust me. After 6 months of therapy, which I saw him on one of the sessions, he came and I saw he was very shaken up. And I asked him what was wrong. And he said, listen, I understand that I'm not sick. And my story, my delusional story, he didn't say delusional story, but my story I thought before was delusional is the right story. And I'm really, the CAA is haunting me, and I'm really under severe, never mind. And I didn't know what to say. And after a few minutes, I got my wits up again, and I told him, listen, what makes you change your idea? Because up to now, you thought you were sure you were handling a sickness. He said, listen, I went with some friends of mine to a bar yesterday. And when I told them I'm getting 3 times a week psychotherapy by a psychiatrist, in a mental health institution, public mental health institution, they said that can't be. And then I said, I understood that you're probably a CIA agent that was set over to look after me from close, from within. And I was really astonished. And then I asked him, so if you understand that, why are you coming into therapy? He said, because I understood something in you liked me. And I'm sure that if I go on coming in therapy, you will watch me and prevent from the CIA killing me. At that moment, I understood that is the only way for him to come to therapy. That is his way for him to make a therapeutic alliance.
Let me interrupt for a second just to ask about that, because it's a very powerful clinical example where he met you, he took to you, he liked you, and he immediately said, I'd like to see you 3 times a week, which your supervisor said isn't the way we do it. You were willing to do it on your own hours. I don't know if the patient knew that you were doing it like that, but it certainly could engender him a sense of real connection with you, that you were going out of your way to be attentive to him. And then it sounds like he met people at a bar and he was embarrassed about how important you are to him. And so he had to change it from the positive thing to a hostile thing, still attached, but now with the distance of the hostility, the CIA, not the Mossad, the CIA is following him. But he still maintained the connection. And that is, he said, well, yeah, maybe there are bad guys, but you'll be watching out for me. So it was really a triumph of, it's a funny thing. You call it the therapeutic alliance. I think of it as the positive transference. It may not be of any difference, but it's an important and impressive connection you two have.
Right. I didn't think of it that way, but I agree with the way you said it. The way I thought about it is I thought some kind of mental breakdown happened 6 months after he was born. And that was a kind of breakdown that happened in the therapy 6 months after we started therapy. But he had a good sign. He had a good connection to me, which was enough to keep him in therapy. That's what I thought that what's happening. But it's also the way you look at it is a nice way to also to look at it. Afterwards, I thought of it that way because when I got to know him better and I got to know his life, I think there was something happening in his first year of life. I think he had a good connection to his mother, maybe, or a good connection for six months, and then something of a breakdown happened. And I think the same thing came over in therapy, but he went on with therapy. And I saw him for 10 years, 3 times a week. And I think about the fact that he knew that I was seeing after hours, and he knew that I wasn't getting paid for it. So he thought, that's why he thought for him that the CIA was paying for me treating him. That's what he thought, that's why I was doing therapy. He didn't think that it came out from my, I don't know, from my connection to him, from my heart, and from my belief that this therapy will help him a lot. But from then on, from 10 years, he came into therapy, even though at some times of the therapy, he was sure that I was also a bad guy. I was turning in a bad guy. It usually happened when I went to vacation or when I didn't understand him or when something with our alliance broke down. And for many months, but he came onto therapy, and that's a very important prognostic figures. But for these 10 years, he didn't go back to hospitalization. He started working again. He went to connection with his family. And I saw how he was trying to dealing. He said it was a tragedy because he knew that he lived in two worlds. One was a delusional world and one was a real world. And that he couldn't, his basic trust, even though he thought I was the most important part of his world, and he knew I liked him very much, and he had a lot of faith in me. On the other side, he didn't believe until the end that I was not part of the CIA.
And as you say, he avoided hospitalization.
And he went back to work. Before that, for 5 years, he stopped working. He was hospitalized. And he went back, and after 10 years, he said, I can now live with this complex world of mine, with a normal world and with a delusional world. And he wanted to stop therapy, even though his delusional world was still a part of him. And I didn't want him to stop therapy because I thought he wasn't cured yet. And that made him very, very more paranoid because he thought that I didn't let him stop therapy because I want to go on and spy on him. And then I understood that he said, I'm afraid that I cannot manage the world without you. And I need to know that I can manage life without you. And then I understood that I had to let him go. And then we started taking down therapy from 3 times a week to 2 times a week, and then to 1 time a week. And now we still, 25 years after that, he still takes the medication. He never hospitalized before. He's still working. And when he needs to know that he can contact me and call me, and I'm always there for him. But he never went back to treatment and never went back to hospitalization.
One of the wonderful things that L'chol Nefesh does is, and rarely done in this part of the work, is you have empirical outcome studies, which we'll talk about a little later. But clearly an example like this, as much as it's taken so much time and energy, it is clearly using a financial basis for the moment, a real financial savings for the institution, for the government. because he's not been hospitalized. He pays taxes. He works. And not to mention he has a life. Tell us about L'chol Nefesh, what the concept is, how it's run, when it started, what your role is.
Okay, so like this patient of mine, which was the first patient, I had a couple of more patients when I was doing when I work in a public mental health clinic. I had three or four more patients who I saw in intensive psychotherapy, people who were dealing with severe mental issues before. Many of them were hospitalized many times. And when we started to have a connection, a therapeutic alliance, all of them stopped going into the hospital. And what we were doing, I think, we were able to contain their disease or their complex emotional issues within the therapy. So this disease, or whatever we call it, didn't manage or overwhelm their life. So they could live a life more freer than the disease than they did before. But I did this all because I was kind of crazy, because I did it on my time. And when I wanted to build up a unit like this in my public mental health clinic where I was working, they said we don't have enough time and availability of therapists to do this kind of work. So what me and a group of friends of mine who were all psychoanalytic candidates, when we finished our training as an analyst, we built a nonprofit organization called L'chol Nefesh. L'chol Nefesh in Israel is for every soul, because we think that every soul could be helped with intensive psychoanalytic psychotherapy if you know how to do it. And it has to be also in the mental health centers, because they couldn't go to private practices because they need a psychiatric surveillance. They need some of them get social security, and they need the containment of the public mental health center. Some of them needed the emergency room that they have over there. But I understood that in order to build such a unit, which expertise in giving such intensive psychotherapy and long-term psychotherapy for at least 3 years, we needed to raise money for it. So we within the L'chol Nefesh, we were able to raise enough amount of money, and we went to this to Abarbanel Mental Health Center, which is situated in Bat Yam, which is a low socio-economical place in Israel. And we offered to the head of the clinic, we offered to build him a unit. And we told him we have the money, we raised the money to pay the therapist. So we will bring our therapist, but who would work in their outpatient clinic. And if they have also therapists from their place that want to work in such a unit, they can come and work in such a unit. And this unit offered patients who couldn't get better with a regular therapy that they were getting in those outpatient clinic or in the hospital, and they could come and get in our unit a 3 times a week psychotherapy for at least 3 years. And we gave the therapist, we gave them a counseling, supervising group, and one-on-one supervision, and also a once-a-week theoretical seminar.
And who were the therapists? What were their backgrounds, their training?
Many of them were psychologists. Some of them were not even finishing their their studying. Social workers, and some of them were psychiatrists working in that unit. But all people didn't have a lot of experience in psychotherapy. And we told them, refer to our unit all those patients who you can't handle with your regular therapy they were getting. And we will try to help them in our unit. Now, the head of the units, we were two heads of units, me and Yael Samuel, who was another colleague of mine. We met all the patients who were referred to the unit. We just spoke to them to get to know them. And we told them that the therapy is for 3 years. And we had one condition that they, for them, not a diagnostic condition. We told them that they have to come to sessions. If they don't come to sessions, we will stop the therapy. And then we asked them, we wanted to have an outcome research, because we understood that in order for this type of therapy to be able to get in more clinics, we have to show an outcome, and we have to show that our experience that these patients who were hospitalized and this kind of therapy can stop the revolving door of hospitalization, we have to have an outcome research.
You know, it's an interesting contrast, because if I understand what you're saying correctly, in the States, patients who have been through all the various treatments and all the various medications and all the various hospitalizations, when none of that works, they're sent to state hospitals to basically vegetate. What you're saying is those very same patients, you want sent to you to see if you can reach them using an analytic model, no less. It's really a remarkable contrast to what's done here. And it's even more remarkable that your outcomes are as positive as they are, as we're about to hear.
You know, one of the patients when you speak about, when we should speak about the Lechol Nefesh project, the place we worked was a state hospital. And one of the patients who joined our project was a patient, a paranoid schizophrenic patient who was hospitalized for 20 years in one of the units over there. And one of the therapists, a psychologist in his unit, was treating another patient of his in our unit, brought another patient of his to our unit. And this patient came over to him and said to him that he wants to come to and have talks with him also if he can. And he said to him, listen, if you will come and adhere to the therapeutic regime, twice a week psychotherapy, and you come to two meetings every week, I'm ready to take you on to therapies. And this patient, you couldn't understand him. He was really delusional. You can purely understand what he was saying. And he came and he adhered to the therapy. And slowly, slowly, there was a therapeutic relationship with the therapist. And he understood what he was talking to me, understood the logic, emotional logic that lay behind his delusions, his talk, his that you can't understand. And when he understood him, it took about a year and a half, and started to understand him, this patient went out of the hospital for the first time after 20 years, and now for this therapy is going on for 6 years, for four and a half years, is out of the hospital. He comes to the hospital only twice a week to the therapist, to the talk with his therapist. Now, one of his delusions was that all the doctors treating him were fake doctors. And after about 2 years of therapy, there were CIA doctors, Russian doctors, Nazi doctors that were giving him, were trying to kill him, not to treat him. And after about 2 years of therapy, this delusion went away. And when the therapist asked him what was happening, why isn't talking about the fake doctors, he said, listen, it's how he told it, you cannot be a doctor without listening to your patient. If you don't listen to your patient and try to listen and understand him, you're fake doctors. So you see there's an emotional sense behind the delusions. And I think this is what we try to do in psychotherapy. In this unit, we took on 20 patients. 40 patients were referred to the unit from all over the state hospitals. Only 20 of them were able to adhere to the therapy sessions and come. And what we did with the outcome research, for every 6 months, they had to answer three questionnaires, outcomes questionnaires, symptomatic questionnaires. And what we saw that those patients who came to the therapy, all of them stopped their hospitalization. When we counted the amount of hospitalization days in the 5 years before they started the project and the 5 years after they started the project, we saw there's a 1,600 days difference. All of them stopped their revolving door. Only one of them was hospitalized for about a month after the project started. And this 1,600 days doesn't take into account the amount of days saved by the patient I told you before, because he wasn't in a state that he could answer the questionnaires. So he's not in that count anymore. Another important that we saw with the outcome research, that at the end of the first year, the state of all of our patients got worse. And only after a year and a half, and then from then on afterwards, their emotional state got better. Okay, and most of the psychotherapy is giving to those patients were a year long. So we can see that these patients need intensive psychotherapy and long psychotherapy. We've said for at least 3 years, many of them go on with therapy, went on even more for that.
So I'm still sitting with the comment of that delusional patient who said that if a doctor doesn't listen to his patient, he's a fake doctor. It's a powerful comment, of course. And then you present this very powerful outcome data that shows people are able to stay attached to their very unfake doctors. And what do we learn from this? And one of my questions is, what is it about being a psychoanalyst that especially allows you to do this kind of work and to understand the patient, yourselves, and the exchanges and the attachments between the two of you uniquely? And I'm wondering if it is the ability to listen in the special way that we listen, and with patients who are aware of wanting to be listened to. But say more. What's your sense of what it is we bring?
I think the main we get to listen to the emotional complexities that these patients deal with. You get to know how to. I think what my psychoanalytic training and my psychotherapy training helped me know to understand the most complex issues they have to deal with, how fragile they are, how hard for them is to have make a therapeutic alliance and have a faith in somebody. I think another issue, a very important issue, is we didn't try to cure them. We did try to get them better, but we tried to help them understand and contain and deal better with their emotional complexities. And that's a very important issue, because the main thing we had to do with a therapist is to help them have their faith in therapy, even though for a long time the patients got worse. And we wanted to help them understand the patient and try to give it hold the faith, even though it took a big time until they got better, and they had also a lot of relapses on the way. But the relationship and how they had the most intense relationship they had to the therapist, that's another thing we had to show them, because some of them thought that their relationship wasn't important for the patient. And we saw how it was very, very important.
In your write-up of Reuven, I saw in your write-up where you said a turning point was when he was able to say to his therapist when he was away that I missed you.
Right. And that was a very touching for this patient to say, to be able to say to him, right?
I mean, it speaks to his ability to value someone and depend upon someone and even complain to someone and knowing that it will be received with their interest first and foremost. Yeah.
And, you know, I remember I like Harold Searles, and I remember Harold Searles said many perennial patients cannot be treated in a way, cannot be treated, but cannot be handled or cannot be manipulated. You have to listen to them and have a connection with them. And I think that's a very important thing we try to show them. And also our understanding of the complexities. Yael is a Kleinian and I'm a Winnicottian, and I think it doesn't matter.
It sounds like it doesn't matter, right? Yeah. When I was in a group of people that were studying clinical material, and there were of many different theoretical persuasions. And when we listened to the he said, she said of a clinical encounter, you could not tell, as we commented on it, who came from what theory. Either you were attuned to what was happening in the patient and between the two people, or you weren't. And that's what was so important. And it sounds like that's what's important in your work as well. So if you were to go back to my original question, psychodialysis, how did you come up with that? And do you have a particular understanding? What made you choose that image?
I thought that these people are dealing with severe emotional complexities and emotional problems with a psychic apparatus, which is not functioning all right, which is not functioning good. Now, I thought, I'm a doctor, and I thought it's the same thing that happens to people when they have kidney failure, right? When people have kidney failure, the kidneys don't function, and they get dialysis. And when somebody has a kidney failure, he needs dialysis 3 times a week in order for the kidneys to function or to be able to overcome the kidney failure. And when somebody has a kidney failure, you don't tell him, I will give you 1 time a week dialysis for 1 year. You will give him 3 times a week dialysis if that's what he needs for as many years as he needs it. Now, I think these people who were meeting had a severe emotional complexities and problems. They couldn't contain them. They couldn't handle them by themselves. Most of them weren't aware of these problems that they were dealing with. And I thought by listening to them and containing them and having a therapeutic alliance, and they needed it for 3 times a week from my experience. So I thought it's able to help them to deal better with their emotional toxins that I had to deal with. So the therapy was like a dialysis, a psychodialysis, which helped them deal with it, bad options, bad emotions. And I thought, if it helps them, why should we do it for 1 year only? Why should we, as long as it helps them, like somebody with kidney failure? So why if they don't cure after 1 year, why should we say they need it only for 1 year? They need it for as long as they want, as long as they need it. From my experience, they do internalize the dialytic function, the psychodialytic of psychotherapy, but it takes many years. Like the patient I told you, my first patient, after 10 years, He wanted to see if he can manage without therapy. And he manages for now for another 15 years. He wasn't hospitalized again because I think he internalized a psychodialytic function of a therapy. But he needed many years and intensive therapy for him in order to be able to do it.
Let me ask you, unrelated to specifically this, you're a training analyst at the Israeli Psychoanalytic. Do you have a private practice in addition to working in the Kol Nefesh?
Sure. I work mainly, that's where I earn my living from, my private practice. In Lechol Nefesh, I go a day a week. I go and supervise two units. Because of our research findings of our first unit, there were now six units in Israel in different hospitals who were giving intensive psychoanalytic psychotherapy to patients in state hospitals. Because we were able to show to the insurance companies in Israel that for these kinds of these patients who and the main factor is that those patients who are hospitalized have a revolving door. Very important, they can have a therapeutic alliance and adhere to therapy. This kind of therapy, if you do it rightly, can stop the revolving door. So because of that, because we saw that it has also an economical side of it, we now have five units in Israel treating almost more than 100 patients who could never get intensive psychoanalytic psychotherapy before and were stuck in a severe mental. And we had also Arab therapists and we had also Arab patients. It's a public mental health, so everybody can come over and get this therapy. Not everybody, where there's a unit whether you're referred to the unit. So it's people who had no chance before of getting this kind of therapy,
It's really a model for the world, especially the outcome studies you've done. We all talk about it over here in the States, in any case, of how important it is to document the effectiveness and the cost effectiveness of the work we do. And you're ahead of us and you're teaching us, and I'm grateful for that. Ilan, thank you for this. I've learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners have learned a great deal. I imagine people may want to be in touch with you to learn more directly from you, people who are wanting to set up such programs over here, again, in the States and elsewhere in the psychoanalytic and psychiatric world. So I want to express my appreciation for you sharing this with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.